All right, listeners, ready to dive deep. Today, we're heading back to ancient India.
Early Vedic society, to be precise.
Right around 1500 to 1100 BCE.
Yeah.
The time when the very foundations of Hinduism were, well, being laid. We're talking ancient texts, historical analysis.
A whole shebang. Trying to understand this pivotal era.
It's a fascinating time, really.
Yeah.
So much happening.
It really is. The way everything's connected, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
The rituals, how they spoke, their social structure. It all weaves together, creates this incredible picture of their beliefs and culture.
It's like a puzzle, right?
Exactly. And the Vedas are key to solving it.
Those hymns, prayers, rituals.
Yeah.
Amazing to think they were passed down orally.
For generations. Can you imagine the memory those priests had?
The Brahmanas.
Right, the Brahmanas. They were like guardians, making sure this knowledge lived on, passed down through time.
Makes you realize how powerful just speaking was back then.
Absolutely. It shaped their whole world.
It really makes you think, how did all this oral tradition affect their social structure?
Well, for one, it gave the Brahmanas a lot of power.
They were the interpreters.
Exactly. The ones who could connect people to the divine. Through all those elaborate rituals.
Speaking of rituals, let's talk about those fire sacrifices, the yajnas.
Mm.
I have to admit, when I first heard about it, I pictured like a big barbecue with the gods. I figured as much.
These were meticulously planned events. Every single detail mattered. It wasn't just a casual get-together.
So each offering, every chant, it all had a deeper meaning.
Oh, absolutely. They believed every step had cosmic significance. It could affect the balance of the entire universe.
Wow. So it wasn't just about keeping the gods happy. It was about maintaining that cosmic order.
Exactly. Dharma.
Right. Dharma. Fascinating how religion and their view of the universe were so closely tied together.
Completely. They believed that if they did these rituals correctly, they were helping keep that cosmic balance.
And those ideas about order, about balance, they didn't just apply to the cosmos, right?
No, not at all. They permeated their whole social structure, too.
Let's unpack that social structure a bit. They had a pretty unique system, the Varna system, right? The caste system.
Right.
It's a complex topic. And, let's be honest, a controversial one.
Absolutely.
What can you tell us about how it originated back then?
Well, we can trace it back to a hymn in the Rig Veda, the Purusha Sukta.
Okay.
It describes the four main Varnas.
The Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras.
Exactly. And they believed those groups came from the body of this primordial being, Purusha.
So they saw these social divisions as something woven into creation itself.
Yeah.
That's a powerful concept.
It is. But it also raises some tough questions about how they used that belief to justify a social hierarchy.
Where some were seen as closer to the divine than others.
Exactly. It's like a blueprint.
For society.
Right. But even with a blueprint, there's room for different interpretations, different ways to put things into practice.
So where did the Kshatriyas, the warriors, fit into all of this?
Well, they played a crucial role, especially the Raja, the king.
They weren't just about brute strength.
Right. Oh, no. They were seen as protectors, upholding that cosmic order.
Dharma.
Yes, Dharma, alongside the Brahmanas.
So it wasn't just about who could swing the biggest sword. There was a deeper meaning to leadership.
Absolutely. They needed other qualities, too.
Like wisdom, justice.
Exactly. And they had to be patrons of those Vedic rituals. Participating in them showed their commitment to upholding Dharma.
That makes sense. But if the Brahmanas had the sacred knowledge, and the Kshatriyas were the enforcers, where did everyone else fit in?
Well, that's where the Vaishyas and the Shudras come in.
Okay.
The Vaishyas were responsible for trade, agriculture, the economy, keeping things running. And the Shudras, even though they were assigned tasks seen as less prestigious, were still essential. They kept the whole system functioning.
It's an interesting picture, but it does raise some concerns.
Definitely.
This idea that everyone's role was divinely ordained. It makes you wonder about things like social mobility and equality.
Absolutely. While it might have brought a sense of order and stability, it also created a rigid hierarchy. And that had lasting consequences for Indian society.
So we've got these interconnected threads, the oral tradition, the rituals, and this divinely ordained social structure. It's clear that early Vedic society was way more complex than just, you know, chanting around a fire.
Oh, much more. And it's important to remember, it wasn't static. These beliefs, these practices, they were always evolving, responding to new challenges. And they laid the foundation for the India we know today.
We've only just scratched the surface, haven't we?
We have. There's so much more to explore.
I'm hooked already.
Well, get ready, because we're going even deeper. We'll look at the intricacies of these rituals, the power dynamics, and how this era shaped Indian culture and thought. It's really amazing when you think about it. Those practices weren't just symbolic. They were woven into everything they did, every part of their lives.
They saw a deeper meaning in everything, right? Like
Yeah.
every little thing was connected to keeping that cosmic balance. It makes you wonder, though, what about the world beyond that?
Beyond their immediate surroundings.
Yeah. Were they aware of other cultures, other ways of life? Do they have any sense of that?
It's interesting that Vedas mainly focus on their own beliefs and rituals, but there are these glimpses, little hints about how they understood geography and how they interacted with other groups.
Okay, so give me the lay of the land. Where were they located geographically?
Well, the heartland of early Vedic society, it was in the northwest of the Indian subcontinent.
Okay.
Particularly around the Punjab and the Indus River.
The Indus River, got it.
And their hymns often mention rivers, you know.
Oh, I bet. Important for agriculture and all that.
Exactly. The Indus, Sarasvati, Ganges, they were vital.
So we're talking about a society rooted in the land, living off the bounty of those rivers. But did their world just stop at the riverbank?
That's the thing. The Vedas do mention them interacting with outsiders.
Outsiders.
People who didn't speak their language, didn't have the same customs.
So they knew there were others out there.
It seems so. They weren't completely isolated.
I wonder, what were those interactions like? Peaceful trading, or maybe more? Conflict.
Well, there's the Rig Veda, one of the most important Vedic texts.
Okay, yeah.
It describes battles, warriors.
Ah, so it wasn't all peaceful hymns and farming.
No. Conflict, territorial expansion, it was part of their reality. They were making their mark on the world.
Right. Through alliances, maybe force, makes it all a lot more complex.
Definitely. It shows how dynamic things were. Always evolving, adapting to new challenges, interacting with other cultures. Really fascinating.
Absolutely. So we've got their location, the interactions. Mm-hmm. What about their belief system? We talked about rituals, sacrifices. But what did they actually believe about the gods? About the afterlife, those big questions.
Well, their pantheon of gods was huge, really intricate.
Lots of gods to keep track of.
They had deities for pretty much every aspect of nature and human experience, like Indra.
Indra.
God of thunder and war. Very important figure. They'd call on him for strength, for victory in battle.
A god for everything. What were some of the other big ones?
Oh, Agni was central, the fire god.
Right.
He was like a mediator between humans and the divine, carrying those offerings up to the gods through the sacrificial flames. And then there was Surya, the sun god.
Light, warmth.
Exactly. And Usha's, the goddess of dawn, representing new beginnings, hope.
Fascinating how they personified these forces, created stories and rituals around them. What about after death, though? Did they believe in an afterlife? Reincarnation.
Well, the Vedic texts offer some clues about the afterlife, but there's no single clear-cut answer. They believed in a realm of the ancestors where the dead continued to exist in some form.
So not exactly heaven or hell, but a continuation.
Yeah, something like that. And there are hints of reincarnation in the Rig Veda, but it wasn't as developed as it would become in later Hinduism. Their understanding of the afterlife was still evolving, it seems, just like their other beliefs.
It's like piecing together a puzzle, right? Trying to understand these ancient beliefs from the pieces they left behind. Speaking of pieces, what about the term Aryan? It pops up sometimes in those texts.
Right, Aryan. It's a word that's been misused, twisted over time.
Definitely.
It's crucial to approach it carefully, not impose later interpretations on this ancient context.
Good point.
In the Rig Veda, it mostly referred to those who spoke the Vedic language, shared their cultural and religious practices.
So a cultural distinction, not racial.
Exactly. It wasn't about race or ethnicity as we understand them today.
It's a good reminder that words change meaning over time, make studying ancient history tricky.
Absolutely. We have to be careful not to project our modern perspectives onto the past. Context is everything.
So much to think about. We've covered their geography, interactions with other groups, their gods, the afterlife. Even the complexity of language and how we interpret history. Yeah. It feels like we're starting to get a much clearer picture of early Vedic society.
We are. And the deeper we go, the more we appreciate how rich and complex it was. This era laid the groundwork for so many aspects of Indian culture and thought.
It's amazing, right? Seeing how all these practices, beliefs, social structures, how they all came together.
It really is. And this is where the power of ritual and oral tradition really shines. Those yajnas. the chanting, the passing down of knowledge.
They were more than just about connecting with the divine, weren't they?
Exactly. They were about strengthening those social bonds, maintaining order.
Those rituals were like the glue that held everything together.
Well, they created a shared experience, a collective identity. When people participated in these rituals, they were reaffirming their place in society, contributing to the well-being of the community.
So it went beyond individual spirituality. It was about the collective good.
Right. Keeping harmony within the society and with the cosmos. That emphasis on collective responsibility, the interconnectedness of all things, it runs through all of Vedic thought.
It's a powerful concept, isn't it?
Yeah.
That our actions affect not just us, but everything around us. But how did they make sure these traditions continued, especially when so much relied on oral transmission?
That's where the Brahmins were so important. They weren't just priests, they were educators, mentors, the keepers of knowledge. Their whole lives were dedicated to memorizing and transmitting the Vedas, making sure those texts stayed alive, passed down through the generations.
That's a huge responsibility. Talk about pressure. Imagine having the core of your culture resting on your shoulders. Were there any specific techniques they used to make sure everything was transmitted accurately?
Oh, yeah. They developed some incredibly sophisticated methods. Mnemonic devices, rhythmic patterns, intricate chanting. It was all about preserving every single syllable, every nuance of the Vedas.
Wow. The original memory champions. But were these teachings open to everyone, or was it just for the select few?
Well, the Brahmanas were the main guardians of that knowledge. But it wasn't completely exclusive. Members of other Varnas, especially the Kshatriyas, also received some Vedic education.
So there was a hierarchy, but it wasn't totally closed off.
Right. But the focus for the Kshatriyas was more on the practical stuff, you know, things they needed as warriors and rulers.
It seems like education was key, though, for shaping individuals and keeping that social order.
Absolutely. They saw Vedic education as transformative. It shaped your mind, your character, your destiny.
Interesting. It makes you wonder, how did they view children, childhood? Was it just about getting them ready for their roles? Or was there more to it?
The sources don't go into great detail about childhood.
But
we do see hints. In their rituals and hymns, they had ceremonies for different stages of a child's life.
From birth to adulthood?
Right. So they definitely recognized childhood as a distinct phase. It had its own importance.
They weren't just rushing them to grow up. What about those rituals? Did they differ between the Varnas?
They did. Expectations and rituals varied depending on social status. Like the Upanayana ceremony.
Okay.
That marked a young boy's initiation into Vedic studies. It was mainly for the upper Varnas, showed their access to higher knowledge.
So even in childhood, that social hierarchy was already shaping their lives, their opportunities. It seems like everything in early Vedic society came back to this idea of Dharma, this cosmic order that influenced everything.
Absolutely. It was everywhere. In their rituals, their social structures, their entire worldview. And that interconnectedness, the belief that everything depends on everything else, well, that might be one of the most enduring legacies of this era.
It's a concept that still resonates today, don't you think? This idea that our actions have ripple effects. They don't just affect us.
Absolutely. And it shows just how much impact the early Vedic period had. It was a time when those ideas were first taking root, shaping the future of Indian history and thought.
This has been fascinating. We've covered so much ground. Rituals, social structures, the cosmos, even childhood. Early Vedic society was so much more than just a set of ancient practices.
It was this vibrant, complex world, full of people trying to understand those fundamental questions about life and our place in the universe.
Amazing to think those questions were being asked thousands of years ago.
They were. And as we continue, we'll uncover even more about this incredible era and its legacy.
It's been quite the journey, hasn't it?
It really has.
This deep dive into early Vedic society, all these rituals, beliefs, social structures, it's amazing what we can learn from a civilization so long ago.
I know, right? And to think so much of what we see in Indian culture today can be traced back to these early practices.
Like we've been looking at the roots of a giant tree, and now I want to see how those roots spread out.
Yeah.
What branches grew from them? What happened to Vedic thought? Did it evolve?
It definitely did. One of the key things that happened was this idea of Brahman becoming more and more important.
Brahman.
Yeah.
That ultimate reality, the cosmic principle behind it all. We touched on it before, but it seems like it's really coming to the forefront now.
You got it. And it's during this time we see the Upanishads emerge.
The Upanishads.
These texts really delve into the nature of Brahman, how it relates to the individual self, the Atman.
Getting deep, philosophical, like the Vedic version of, you know, existential pondering.
Uh-huh. In a way. They tackled some big questions. The nature of reality, consciousness, the meaning of life.
Wow. To think they were exploring those questions thousands of years ago, that's incredible.
It shows how curious they were about the universe. And that thirst for knowledge, it wasn't limited to just a few people. While the Brahmanas were still the main keepers of knowledge, the Upanishads show that philosophical inquiry was widening.
So more people were joining these discussions, thinking about these big questions.
Exactly. People from all walks of life.
So we've got this kind of philosophical awakening. And it must have had a huge impact on their religious thought.
It did. The shift towards a more introspective, philosophical way of understanding reality, well, it really changed things.
I wonder, though, did it change their daily lives? Did it change how they saw themselves in the world?
It's a great question. We don't have, like, diaries from back then,
right.
No firsthand accounts. But you can see these ideas reflected in their rituals and their social structures, how they changed over time.
Let's talk about those social structures. What about the caste system? Did all this focus on unity, on interconnectedness, did it change things?
Well, that's the thing. It didn't really loosen those boundaries.
You mean the caste system stayed strong?
Unfortunately, yeah. Even with this idea of Brahman emphasizing that we're all connected.
It's kind of a contradiction, isn't it?
It is. It shows that even with spiritual progress, social change doesn't always follow immediately.
It's a good reminder that history is complex. Progress isn't always a straight line. It makes you think, what kept that caste system so rigid, even with all these changes happening?
That's a question historians are still trying to figure out. There are theories, though. Some think the growing complexity of society and more specialized jobs.
Yeah, it might have played a role.
Maybe. Others point to political power structures, groups who benefited from a strict hierarchy.
So those in power wanted to keep things as they were.
It's possible. Social structures are always being influenced by all sorts of things.
It's never simple, is it?
Not at all. But understanding those forces, that's how we can understand how societies change.
Okay, so we've got these philosophical shifts, the caste system sticking around, society becoming more complex. What else was happening? Was there anything going on beyond their immediate surrounding?
Oh, they were expanding geographically.
Oh, where were they heading?
Vedic culture started moving eastward out from the Punjab. They reached the Ganges River plains, really fertile land.
That must have brought new challenges, new opportunities, new people to meet, too.
Absolutely. We don't have a ton of detail about those encounters, but you can imagine they weren't always easy. New ideas, maybe some conflicts. It was a time of change and growth.
Expanding their horizons, literally and figuratively.
Yeah.
It's like they were constantly trying to balance things.
They were. Holding on to their traditions while navigating these new experiences. That back and forth between what stays the same and what changes, that's really a defining feature of this period.
It's incredible, really. This deep dive into early Vedic society is a time of such incredible transformation. Intellectual, spiritual, social. It's amazing how much of what we've talked about still has an impact today.
I know, right? Not just on Indian culture, but on how we understand what it means to be human.
It's a great reminder that even though these societies existed thousands of years ago, they're still relevant. They still have things to teach us.
Absolutely. And as we've seen, it wasn't just a single moment frozen in time. It was dynamic, constantly evolving. It laid the groundwork for so much that came after.
Well, that's it for our deep dive today, listeners. Keep those minds curious and keep exploring the fascinating world of history.